This
know when you're ready to
conference
go
will
out.
now be recorded.
Well, that sounds like
Okay,
the
you're ready
official
to go.
will. Okay, thank you, Kevin. Well, thanks everybody for taking some time out of your busy day. We hadn't had a meeting in a bit, and Kevin and I thought that although we don't have a lot of items to talk about today, that we really should get together just to make sure that anybody on this particular committee does have some time to ask Kevin and Mike, Sharon, and Alex some questions. And so I think we were really just going to open it up to a discussion around some of the recent financial activity and other happenings, Kevin, and your team that you think would be helpful and appropriate and timely for this committee to hear from. And then, of course, if there's anybody on the committee that has a few things that they would like to add or discuss, I think that would be fine too.
Sounds good. If you want me to, I can just jump in before I turn it over to Mike to go through the reports. But as you can imagine, we continue to be impacted here at the airport. We have been holding steady at that number of roughly 75% down. You know, on any given day, it could drift anywhere between 70% down up to 80% down. A lot of that, I do believe, continues to be related to the travel advisory, despite the fact that we did get the testing exemption. I don't think people are, you know, feeling comfortable flying, and in some cases don't want to be bothered having to go through the testing in order to avoid the quarantine period. So I do believe, unfortunately, until there's wide distribution of the vaccine, we're going to continue to experience this downturn in traffic. I think what you're going to hear today from Mike is that despite the fact that it's a very, very challenging situation for us here in terms of revenues and, you know, operations of our business partners, we are keeping our head afloat. A lot of that is related to the fact that we did get the CARES Act money and the fact that we've been able to, you know, maintain a level of healthy reserves here. But it's also due to the fact that staff have really stepped up to the plate, have been operating as efficiently as possible. As you know, in some cases, we've asked staff to make substantial cuts to their budget and operate a little bit more efficiently and smarter. And other cases, we've had units have their schedules changed to get greater efficiency out of the workforce. So I think as we go through this today, you're going to see it's really a lot of those efforts that have contributed to put us in a position where we can continue to, you know, move ahead here and, as I said, keep our head above water, despite the fact that we have a lot of challenges. And before I turn it over to Mike, I'll just finish. You know, generally, as I talk to the airlines, you know, they all express concerns about the future. They all continue to indicate that they believe they're going to be smaller carriers for a while. Despite that, though, I continue to hear good things about the Bradley market and the fact that, you know, most of these airlines still believe that there's going to be a healthy future here in Connecticut. So with that, I'll turn it over to Mike, and Mike can go through the reports with you.
Sure, thank you. So as usual, we will focus on the year-to-date budget reports and start with Bradley. Before we get into the referencing of numbers, I just want to highlight a couple of things in the background, remind us that we are, you know, this is an actuals to budget comparative report, but recall that that budget is much lower than it usually is without COVID. So on the revenue side, for example, we targeted an annual budget that would be roughly 50% of normal, staged in a 25% of normal for the first quarter, 50% of normal in the second, 50% of normal in the third, and 75% in the fourth. That approach was taken for activity-driven revenue streams. So for example, terminal concessions or rental car revenue or landed weight projections on the aircraft. So with that in mind, as we look at variances to budget, just keep in mind the bar is so much lower than it otherwise would be. So with that in the background, I'll jump right in. Total operating revenues for Bradley are above budget by $1.2 million, or 7.8%. I would like to point out specifically the landing fees, just as a demonstration of the aircraft or airline activity. We targeted the passenger airlines, again, with that 50% of normal target for landed weight. The first quarter was 25%, but cargo, we targeted at 100% of normal. So on average, you're looking at an expectation through the budget of 60% of landed weight, and very heavily weighted to the back end of the year. So the fact that we're beating budget right now is nice to see, but it's not necessarily the panacea to solve COVID, if you will. As we look at the non-operating revenues, I just wanted to point out one item there, parking revenue, automobile parking revenue. You can see we have zero recorded there. If you recall, we transitioned away and terminated the old parking arrangement back effective May 31st, and we entered into a simple parking management services agreement. So in kind, we are trying to integrate the two financial systems so that they can report activity to us in a seamless manner. And we're working through that system integration now. But anecdotally, I will mention, it's not in the results you see before you, but on average, we're bringing in about $350,000 to $400,000 of parking revenue a month, offset by about $225,000 to $250,000 of parking operating expenses. So we are cash flow positive in the parking operation currently, not by a whole lot, but that's only because we've done drastic cost-cutting measures on the operating expense side. Currently, there's no shuttle buses because there's no service lots open. Many employees were furloughed to save on personnel costs, et cetera, in the parking operation, not the CAA employees. But all in all, right now you have zero results reported inside the document, but you will get those reported to you in the coming months. The parking revenue, also just want to mention there, you know, in normal times we would be at, for example, $32 a day in the garage. It's been drastically cut all the way down to $8 a day. And that's in order to preserve some level of activity and be competitive with the off-airport valet parkers, which have cut their prices and are drastically low as well. So just a couple of notes there, but all in all, again, it results in $1.2 million or 7.8% in excess of budget for operating revenues. On the total operating expense side, recall when we created the budget, we had a 10% budget reduction compared to what that budget otherwise would have been, and that is in total for operating expenses. And that was no small feat because there are certain line items here that are not discretionary. Take the pilot, for example, payment in lieu of taxes. That is a statutorily locked-in number that we owe. There is no cost-saving measure there. Or the security services line. We have to keep security here to protect the airport regardless of the depressed activity levels of passengers. Or utilities, for example, you have to keep the lights on, right? So in order to achieve an overall 10% cut was pretty a good effort by the staff, and therefore the bar is lower. So overall, total operating expenses were $5 million under budget or 23%, but I will caution that the lion's share of that is coming from the administrative cost line and repairs and maintenance cost line that we believe those budget variances are just timing differences right now, and that those expenses will be realized by the end of the year. So all in all, that produces an operating income of negative $331,000 year to date, which is $6.2 million better than budget. But again, it's because of those, mainly because of those timing differences on the admin costs and repairs and maintenance. Coming further down the document, the net airport cash flow, once you incorporate the non-operating revenues and debt service, net negative cash flow of $1 million year to date. And so I do want to highlight a couple of things in this area. One, PFCs, we're keeping a very close eye on. Naturally, with passengers not buying as many tickets, the PFC revenue stream is drastically depleted. In normal times, we would have over $1 million in PFC revenue per month. We only have $1 million after 4 months of the year. So we're definitely keeping our eye on that. Debt service, we naturally have to continue to service. We're utilizing reserves and CARES Act to the extent necessary to do so. And then CARES Act revenue itself, I also wanted to highlight. So in the non-operating revenue miscellaneous line, you'll see $2.3 million there. To date through October 31st, the date of this report, of the $28.5 million of CARES Act money, we've drawn down about $8.8 million. but $6.5 million of that was utilized to fully redeem the parking bonds as a mechanism of transition from the old parking arrangement to the new parking arrangement. So that money came in and right out. We still believe that was a very smart strategic move. It will yield, in the long run, a much better parking financial result for the airport, but right now, not benefiting the bottom line today. In addition to that parking-oriented CARES draw, we've drawn about $2.3 million of CARES money to generally support operating expenses. We are looking at personnel costs and other simple OPEX like utility bills to justify getting that drawn down from the FAA. So were it not for that money coming in the door, the results quoted at the bottom line, they would naturally be worse. But to date through December 16th of the $28.5 million, we've drawn down about $17 million. So as we progress in future months through the financial results, I just want to caution and raise the specter that this grant was a four-year grant. So while we're trying to submit reimbursement requests backed by expenses of this year, trying to get the money in as quick as we can so it doesn't evaporate and get rededicated to another federal program. And so it's in the door, but really it's supposed to help us, support us for quite some time in the future beyond this fiscal year. So even though we might boost results this year, it's really going to then come on the downside of the mountain in years to come.
So are you thinking about drawing that down, Mike, just relative to that for a second? What things on the horizon do you think might impact needing to do something with those funds again?
Well, if the downturn is sustained at these levels, we will have to continue to dig into reserves. At this point, it's kind of been a level game. We've dug into them a little bit, not too much, but it's a balancing act. You got the CARES money coming in and replacing reserves that we may have had to dig into. But the CARES Act money, once it's all in the door, then you're going to get to year two, year three, year four. And if the underlying passenger levels haven't returned, thus returning revenue streams to normal levels, you're going to have to rely on those reserves in the absence of more CARES Act 2.0, 3.0, 4.0, whatever it might be. That's what I'm trying to caution us all as we look at the report, that the CARES Act money rolling in, not to a huge degree in this particular October statement, but as we look at November, December, and January, you're going to see these CARES Act money rolling in, and it's going to give us the impression that the results are better than they really are, because all we're trying to do is get it in the door and then be able to utilize it and defray the consumption of reserves in future years.
Well, and I think that's why I'm trying to ask you, as you think going forward, where do you think you're going to need those dollars? It's unclear to me if in 15, and I know it's hard to say when things are going to come back, so you're probably going to start with that, but I guess over the next 6 or 8 months, let's look a little bit short term, do you foresee something specific that you'll need to be taking dollars out of there? And part of what's also behind my question relative to that is, and maybe this is a separate subject, is where are we with some of the negotiations on our vendors around, you know, extending fee grants for them for a while longer, and could that possibly create more trouble for us?
Sure. So a couple of things there. The updates on you know, granting abatements to concessionaires and what have you. We've been taking short-term looks. So we've given, you know, 50% of MAG relief to the rental cars, for example, and that was for a six-month window. That was from July to December. But come January, if things haven't returned, are we going to be back at the negotiating table? Most likely, right? How long does that last is anybody's guess, but I think we're looking at it that, you know, if we can just get through fiscal 21 and perhaps you look at 22, we don't believe passenger levels are going to be back to a point where you won't need some level of reserves to support your operating expenses, because in normal times, all your revenues support operating expenses and then some. But likely the money we're taking in now from the CARES Act is going to need to prop us up throughout 21, and it is, and continue to do so in fiscal 22. But we're hopeful that fiscal 23, you wouldn't have to rely on CARES Act anymore. We still will need to rely on all of the cost-cutting measures we've likely put in play now. We'll likely have to take that kind of conservative look for operating expense for quite some time, but we feel like with the tools in our toolbox on that front, as well as the CARES Act money, it can sustain us through
the next couple of years. That's not very easy to do. You have to make judgment calls about, you know, deferring maintenance or keeping staffing levels unusually low. So you can't do it forever. But that's the, hopefully that answers your question. That's the kind of look forward we're dealing with.
So Kevin made a statement a little bit earlier, which I totally agree with, is although we're going through this mess right now, the airport still is doing well with more routes coming on and things of that nature, which I think for the future makes you feel really good. And hey, Madge, I don't mean to be putting you on the spot, but, you know, I've also heard that, you know, air travel may never return to where it is. People are just, and when I think about us here at Cigna, I'm not hearing us returning to having large groups of people board airplanes to do functions anymore. A much more reliance on video and things of that nature. Have there been any thoughts that you guys have had, Madge, or certainly you, Kevin, too, around how severely the travel may be different in the future around air, or is it too early to tell?
Yeah, no, we are looking at that. Of course, looking at a lot of industry data on it too. And I know one conclusion people are drawing is that while people will still go to visit customers, a lot of, you know, intercompany travel will probably diminish, right? Like maybe you won't need to go to meet with your colleagues quarterly or whatever. You know, that people have obviously figured out the Zoom thing. So yeah, I think a certain level of, well, we think a certain level of business travel will probably not come back.
Yeah. Kevin, did you have some thoughts there?
Yeah, Brett, this is Kevin. I think, you know, as we talk about these things within the airport industry, I think, you know, just as Mary Ellen outlined, you know, the industry is thinking that way as well, that there are some fundamental changes that are going to definitely occur. I think it's just a matter of how deep is the cut into travel, and I think, you know, only time is going to tell on that.
Okay. Thank you. Sorry, Mike.
No worries. Yeah. You know, the only other data point I wanted to mention was just citing employment. You know, month to date in October, we were down 71%, and year to date through October, we were down 74%. But as Kevin said, that can vary on any given day. And as we monitor November and December activity indirectly through TSA security checkpoint volume data, you know, we're kind of just staying right there at that on average 75% down. So hopefully it turns around in 2021. So with that, I'm happy to answer any other Bradley questions or any specifics. All right. Let's jump into...
Mike, maybe just one kind of tangential question, I guess. You know, I have not been to Bradley myself. I'm not flying, unfortunately. But the people that do come and go, the passengers and the people meeting them, is everybody pretty much behaving mask-wise and social distancing-wise?
Yeah, absolutely. I have been surprised. You know, we put in very early on the requirement that in the terminal you had to wear a mask. We were expecting a fair amount of pushback, but it has generally been accepted. We really don't have any problems here. You know, the one thing that we continue to try to work with the airlines on is reinforcing to passengers that through the boarding process don't crowd. When people are exiting the aircraft, to try to convince them to stay in their seat until their row is ready to go off the aircraft. So, you know, it's things like that that we work on. But generally here in the terminal, people are very well aware of the need to maintain the social distancing. You'll see it, you know, as people are sitting in the hold rooms, that they're maintaining the separation. And, you know, certainly the mask wearing, there's very, very good compliance with that.
Hey, Kevin, how does Southwest handle the boarding? Is it just that there's not that many people so you don't have to line up A, B, C, D in their way of getting people on and off?
What they do is they board now in groups of 10. So when you look at how they have their stanchions outlined where they typically would have been boarding in groups of 60, there is now plenty of space for those 10 people to space out. Right? So you maintain that 6 foot of distance between each one of those people, and they're constantly reminding folks, just stay in your seats, you know, until your group of 10 is called.
All right, there's no other Bradley questions. I'll jump into the GAs. So here, same backstory a little bit on the budget, right? So for those activity-driven budget revenue line items like FBO revenue or rental car revenue, we took that same tack to target 50% of normal with the dispersion of 25, 50, 75 across the quarters. But luckily for the GAs, the operating revenue itself is largely dependent upon land rent. So as of now, we haven't had any tenants of ours that have been defunct, if you will. So they've been steadily paying, and there's no activity-driven impact to it because of COVID, thankfully. So overall, the total operating revenues of $1.1 million are about $429,000 or 59% over budget. But again, the bar set by the budget was pretty low. FBO revenue and rental car revenue, FBO revenue being reported in the other operating revenue line, has been much better than we anticipated. But it certainly is a little bit less than it normally is. But which we'll get to in a moment, the biggest share revenue-wise on the GAs is mostly about the aviation fuel tax. So the operating revenue is nice, and it's nice that it's beating a low bar of a budget, but the lion's share of funding typically comes from the aviation fuel tax, which we'll get to in a moment. On the total operating expense side, we're $403,000 or 19% under budget. Again, a lot of that is coming from the administrative costs and repairs and maintenance variances, which again we believe are just timing at this point. We think that those variances will close throughout the year. But all in all, operating income is a negative, operating loss, I should say, is a negative $555,000, which is certainly beating budget, but still a negative. As we get into the non-operating section, the story here, like I just mentioned, is the aviation fuel tax. In a typical year, for example, fiscal 19, aviation fuel tax on a gross basis was $7.1 million. Fiscal 20, which naturally had the impacts of COVID in the fourth quarter, but also jet fuel pricing being very low, it only amassed $3.9 million gross. So as we look into fiscal 21, the first quarter, normally you'd be expecting at least $1.5 million per quarter, at least. The identified aviation fuel tax revenue was only $392,000. So again, in normal years, historically, Tweed has been granted $1.5 million, but we've been targeting a proportional reduction to share the pain, so to speak. So if we are down 75% right now in first quarter aviation fuel tax receipts, we're trying to reduce the Tweed allocation by 75% as well. So the $205,000 you see on the aviation fuel tax revenue line is the net of $392,000 that has come in the door, minus the half of what Tweed will get over the year of $187,500, which nets to $205,000. So drastically lower than what we normally would enjoy there, and we definitely got to keep our eyes on that. The net airport cash flow bottom line, you can see the negative $345,000 to date. I will point out for the month, yes, it's a positive of 182, but that's only because the whole quarter's aviation fuel tax is being reported here in the month of October. So we're definitely mindful of it. Our reserve balances, you can see quoted there, but they will be shrinking in the absence of normal levels of aviation fuel tax.
Let me just jump in for a minute. On the fuel tax, as you can imagine, the fact that we have advised Tweed that we're intending to cut their allocation by 75% has raised a lot of concerns. And we are already hearing from the Office of Policy and Management, discussions about how can they get additional money to Tweed. So there's going to be a lot more to come out of that. I am pressing OPM to sit down and have a general policy discussion about, you know, how we're handling all of the airports here in the state, and the fact that if this is going to be what's in place for the foreseeable future, we may have to think about actually curtailing operations at some of the airports. So a lot more to come on that, but there's going to be significant issues associated with this drop in the fuel tax receipts.
So, Kevin, you were getting at a little bit of what I was going to ask is, as we like to say here at Cigna, who has the D or the decision on what the amount would be?
Well, it's if you look at statute, it calls for, you know, the fuel tax money to actually come to the Connecticut Airport Authority. However, we are to work in consultation with OPM as to how that money is spent. Right. So the reality is both us as well as OPM be the decision makers on this. If you take the statute literally, they can't act without us and we can't act without them. So that's why, as I said, I'm pressing for this, you know, kind of higher level policy conversation about, you know, what is the appropriate use of this money. And if the state, for example, was to direct that all of the fuel tax money had to go to Tweed, well, then that's not necessarily going to force us to take some actions as it relates to our airports. All right, so there has to be a much more involved conversation about this as to where we're going to end up on it.
What's the timing and sequencing around these discussions, Kevin?
Well, I'm trying to push for them to occur right now. I mean, we have an agreement in front of Tweed at this point that I'm sure they're not going to sign off on until they have some understanding as to how this is going to be resolved. So, you know, it's going to be a pressing issue because their cash flow is going to start to be impacted by the fact that no money is flowing to them until they sign off on this agreement. So I would expect that, you know, right after the holidays, we're going to be having some fairly high-level conversations about it.
Thank you.
So that's all I had to report on the GAs, unless there's any more specific questions. I'm happy to answer.
Sounds like people are good with Bradley and the GAAs. Hey, Kevin, I had a quick question for you. How is the fire department handling social distancing?
Well, we certainly require every employee when they're here at work to wear masks,
right.
Particularly in situations where they can't social distance. But we've also put in procedures over there that the only folks that are allowed into the firehouse or fire department personnel, right? So there we're limiting people's exposure to others, but we are pretty strict with the enforcement of wearing the masks over there as well.
You know, because I was just thinking back on my tour over there when life was normal, you know, they all eat together in the kitchen and, you know, there were sort of sleeping areas that were, you know, fairly close. Are they literally wearing masks when they're, you know, sitting around in those areas, or they don't have to so much? And partly why I'm asking is that's such a critical situation, is that something were to happen in there and people needed to be quarantined, that would be a big issue for us in terms of operating the airport without fire department.
Yeah, no doubt about it. But they are pretty good, as you said, about wearing the masks. I was over there myself a couple of weeks ago to speak to them all, and I was very pleased to see that they were all in compliance with that. As you can imagine, you know, if we were to have an outbreak in any of our operating groups, it's a challenge for us. But in particular, there are two groups that we pay particular attention to, and that's our ARC unit, the firefighters, as well as our operations folks. Both of those units become very critical with limited staff that would be available on a day-to-day basis. So we want to make sure that we're keeping those folks healthy.
Okay. Appreciate that. I don't think, Kevin, we had anything else, did we, that we wanted to talk to the group about?
No, that was it. We just, you know, as I said, if folks had any other questions about anything here at the airport, I know a question that I get quite a bit from folks is, you know, what is the status of Aer Lingus going forward? I did have a very good call with them a couple of weeks back where they indicated they're still very much committed to Bradley. Unfortunately, they do not foresee starting operations here or restarting operations here in the near term simply because of, you know, load factor issues and what they're experiencing on other routes. So I would anticipate that the earliest we would see a return to Aer Lingus is at the end of 2021, if not into 2022.
Wow.
But outside of that, you know, the other airlines, they're pretty dynamic with their schedules, even though, for example, an airline will post a schedule for the springtime, they're constantly adjusting it. So if you look at Southwest, for example, come March, we're scheduled to have 11 departures per day from Southwest, which starts to get them, you know, closer to what their normal mix would be. But, you know, that is subject to change. We've already received one adjustment to that March schedule. So, you know, it remains to be seen, you know, how the activity starts to ramp back up.
And Kevin, a little nearer term, have any flights been canceled tonight and tomorrow with the storm?
Yeah, we most activity is going to be suspended. For example, Southwest only operated two flights this morning and they shut down, and they're not planning to resume until approximately 12 noon tomorrow. I think American Airlines might be bringing in a Philadelphia flight later on today, but for all intents and purposes, you know, the activity has really suspended already.
Right. Okay. Thanks.
All right. Well,
yeah, what we're
terrific.
To make sure that I'm sorry.
Go ahead, Kevin.
I was just saying what we're working on is Amazon is continuing to operate. They may suspend, you know, some operations tomorrow, but we want to make sure that they can continue to get in tonight.
Yeah, this puts a lot more pressure on all that shipping, doesn't it? It's tough.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, I'm expecting some packages for them. Kevin, I'm expecting some packages, so you make sure that plane gets down.
All right.
I'll
keep an eye on that.
Unfortunately, my children don't believe in Santa Claus anymore, so it's all on me. I can't blame him anymore. Well, as always, Kevin and Mike, thank you for the time. Anybody else on the phone? Questions, comments, concerns before we let everybody go?
Bring on
okay,
the vaccine.
Well,
bring on the vaccine.
Bring on the vaccine. Absolutely. Don't stand in the way of that coming in either, Kevin.
Right.
All right. Well.
Right.
Yeah. Well, thanks everybody. I hope everyone has a wonderful, safe holiday season, and look forward to talking to you again probably in the new year.
Okay, thanks.
Thank
Happy
you.
Holidays.
Thank you, everybody.